Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. On Wednesday afternoon, Governor Peter Shumlin devoted his entire State of the State address to the growing problem of heroin and opiate addiction in Vermont. Shumlin outlined a four-point plan to deal with this issue. The governor says a new approach is needed that emphasizes treatment and prevention programs because the state cannot solve this problem simply by throwing more and more people in jail.
We must bolster our current approach to addiction with more common sense. We must address it as a public health care crisis, providing treatment and support rather than simply doling out punishment, claiming victory, and moving on to the next conviction.
Will this approach be successful, and how much will it cost to put it into place? These are some of the questions we have today for Governor Peter Shumlin. Governor, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Hey, it's always great to be with you.
It's a very sad day at the State House today with the passing of Chittenden Senator Sally Fox. She served seven terms in the House, two in the Senate. You served with her, I believe, early on in the House. How will you remember her?
You know, Sally Fox worked harder than almost anyone I know to fight for folks without a voice, to fight for children, and to fight for fair health care. And, you know, the extraordinary thing about her is that she never gave up. She's been fighting a battle against cancer for a while. I was in a working meeting with her just 2 weeks ago. She was planning to be back. So it's a huge loss to Vermont. My heart goes out to Michael and to the boys and to her family. But this is a really tough loss. She served Vermont with extraordinary distinction.
She had a lot of friends at the State House.
She did. I remember, I'll never forget when Governor Cunin originally appointed me to the House. Ralph Wright was Speaker. He put me on the Judiciary Committee, which I knew nothing about, chaired by then Representative Amy Davenport, now Judge. And Sally then became the chair when Cunin appointed Davenport to a judgeship. But Sally kind of took me by the arm and taught me a lot about, you know, how you get things done for Vermonters in the State House. She was really an extraordinary public servant.
Today in the program, we are going to discuss a lot of issues facing the state of Vermont, perhaps the budget gap, the governor's opiate and heroin addiction plan. We'll be talking about property taxes and health care. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Or this is a great opportunity to talk to the governor live and directly. You can do that by giving us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Let's start with your State of the State address, single topic being the heroin and opiate addiction in the state of Vermont. You certainly put a highlight on this issue. If people didn't know this was a problem in the state of Vermont before, they sure knew it now. Was that part of your goal?
It really is. I mean, I think one of the things that I can do as governor is help to take an issue that we all want to hide, that we don't want to talk about, you know, that we quietly try to avert our eyes from if it's not affecting one of our family members or our friends or our neighbors, and kind of hope it, you know, it kind of, we don't talk about it and it goes away. And there's a stigma around addiction. Let's be honest about this. So I'm hoping that by not only coming up with a more proactive way of dealing with it as a disease and having the treatment for that disease, instead of thinking that we can kind of arrest our way out of this cycle, that I can also help to open up the conversation across Vermont about coming out of, you know, our tendency to hide from it, really talk about it, let the folks who suffer from this disease go forward with their recovery without feeling shame, and let's embrace them together and figure out how, as a community and a state, we can better deal with it, because this will destroy Vermont's quality of life, our sense of security, our sense of safety, our sense of community, if we don't do a lot better than we've been doing.
Now, a key part of the plan is an effort to get people who are arrested for the possession of opiates quickly into treatment programs. And if they successfully complete this treatment, they can perhaps avoid going to jail. As you mentioned in your address, there are already 500 people on a waiting list for treatment. The state doesn't have the capacity to do that. So if this initiative is passed, are you going to be able to ramp up soon enough to help people get the treatment that they need and want?
That's what I've committed to doing. And just to back up on the numbers, I mean, the 500 is a rough guess of what we have just in three regions of the state. That's just Chittenden County, Central Vermont, and the Kingdom. So we know that the waiting lists are much longer than that, and frankly, that we have too many people who are addicted who aren't going into treatment in the first place. So my goal, and, you know, we've been working very closely with our providers, with law enforcement, with the folks that are on the ground doing this job, is that we will utilize the resources, whatever it takes, to help us get to the point where you have a guy like, you know, as you know, I spoke a lot about Dustin Machy, but he's a great example of our problem. I mean, here's a kid who grew up on a hardworking dairy farm in Vermont, great family, supportive family. You know, friends offered him Oxycontin during an exam in high school. He takes it during the break, becomes an addict hard and fast. When he finally hit rock bottom and was a full, you know, addicted and needed treatment, his mom calls the treatment center and says, you know, I need treatment for my son. And they said, is he suicidal? And she said, no, he's not suicidal. He's addicted. And they said, we can't help you. We've got to take care of the folks who are suicidal right now. Our waiting lists are too long. I mean, that is not acceptable. So that's the system we got to fix, among other things.
Your plan also calls for tougher penalties for people who are convicted of selling heroin and opiate drugs. The penalties right now are pretty high. I think they're 25 or 30 years if they sell a certain quantity of heroin. Some people are suggesting it would be better to allocate more resources to local law enforcement efforts to catch these people in the first place than worry about longer jail sentences. Is that part of your plan?
Well, we've become much better about trying to catch these people in the first place. Let's remember that Tris Coffin, our U.S. attorney, has a great partnership. It's an unprecedented partnership with my drug task force, with the Vermont State Police, with local and municipal police. And we've been doing stings across Vermont from Bennington to St. Albans and everywhere in between. Springfield, you name it, we've been doing it. Sometimes we've gone in twice, as we did in Bennington. We're going to continue to do that. Our goal there is to get the Vermonters who are addicted to heroin into treatment and to get the dealers into jail. And, you know, that's one place where you won't find me having any forgiveness. The economics of this challenge are extraordinary. You can buy this stuff south of us, New York, you know, Philadelphia, Boston, whatever, for $6, $7, $5 a bag. They sell it up here for $20-$30 a bag. So there's a huge economic incentive to bring this stuff in here and sell it and make a lot of loot. So, you know, my feeling is combining treatment for addicts, treating as a disease, with tougher penalties for the dealers that are bringing in is just good Vermont common sense. And the other piece I've added is to enhance penalties for folks who are breaking into our homes, stealing our loot with weapons. And I think it's good common sense to enhance those penalties so that if you're using weapons in conjunction with ripping Vermonters off to feed your habit, you know, it's not going to be a happy life.
So what's the bottom line cost to this plan? And in this tough budget year where you're starting off with a budget gap of $70 million, where's the money going to come from?
Well, let's back up for a second and remember two things about the money. Forgetting your hearts for a minute, forgetting your compassion. We couldn't be spending more money, wasting more money, losing more money on this battle than we are right now. Because when an addict has to pay the kind of prices that I just outlined for their drug, they steal to do it. And it can cost $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year to support a habit in Vermont before you put a roof over your heads and, you know, food on the table. So right now it's expensive because we're getting ripped off. We're paying for it that way. Second piece is right now it costs about $1,126 for a week of prison in Vermont. It costs $123 a week to put folks in treatment facilities in Vermont that are state-of-the-art national models. So we're seeing our prison spending double in the last 9 years. We're spending at an uncontrollable rate. We're already allocating $8 million to prevention and addiction. And I'm saying, let's not only just spend more money, let's reorganize the way we're doing this. Let's start saying, yes, we will make the money. We're going to spend a couple $1 million helping, adding to the $8 million we're spending already in various ways to make treatment available to all. But let's change the judicial process so that instead of taking months to wind your way through the court system between your bust and your conviction, we instead say to both our prosecutors and then our judges, we're going to give you a third-party assessment almost immediately upon bust that will tell you whether the person that you busted is someone that we should be disappointed in, mad at perhaps, or someone that we're afraid of. If it's someone we're afraid of, we'll throw you in jail because it means you might kill someone. But if it's someone that we're mad at or disappointed in, which is most addicts, let's get them the health care treatment they deserve. And I think the process we're setting up will help save money for taxpayers by averting the role of so many ending up in prisons, coming out, getting re-addicted and going back in. We've got to treat this as a disease, just like you do with cancer, kidney disease, any other disease.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. And we're also live tweeting the show, and we want to know that you can tweet us at Vermont Edition. Lots of ways to contact us. Phone is 1-800-639-2211. Governor, we just did get this tweet. You suggested, I think, around $200,000 in the Budget Adjustment Act. That's something that will be passing in the next few weeks to help eliminate that waiting list that you talked about for people wanting treatment. And our person here wants to know, how did you arrive at that number, and is it really enough?
So the way we arrived at all the numbers in our recommendation of roughly $2 million is by working with the people who are on the out in the field right now giving treatment, the Howard Center. Bob Bick was very helpful to us, and so many others across Vermont who are helping to do what we can right now. And I know the $200,000 sounds like a low number in a budget adjustment. The reason that that number seems low is that that's money we can get out to people like the Howard Center and other providers across the state right now to help them hire staff up, hire doctors, hire nurses, hire the folks on the ground that can help monitor some of the challenges out there. And then they're going to build some of that into their own budgets. So all I can tell you is the legislature's job is to look at our recommendations and, you know, we can add where we're short and take away where we might be being too generous. But the bottom line is our numbers come from working together with providers, law enforcement, prosecutors across the state and coming up with a budget that we felt would meet this challenge.
In your speech, you also talked about having treatment centers in a number of communities across the state, and you urge people in those local communities to be accepting of that because sometimes that's a problem. And we just got an email from Mark who wants to know, what do you plan to do to increase the number of brick-and-mortar abuse treatment facilities to increase treatment access that everybody supports, knowing that some of those projects are going to be stymied at every step by some people in the local communities?
Well, that's one reason I think it's so important that as governor I add my voice to this. Listen, I said very clearly in a speech, and I really mean it, the time has come for us to stop averting our eyes to heroin addiction in our front yards while we fight and fear treatment facilities in our backyards. And I think by saying to communities, listen, when people are in treatment for heroin addiction or for OxyContin addiction, they are no more dangerous, generally, than people who are being treated for any other disease. These are folks who are getting help and who are getting the services. They are our neighbors. They are our kids. They are folks that we should be helping out just as we would with any disease. And I think if we can shift our thinking about treatment and recovery, we will find that communities will fear less treatment facilities in their backyards. And you've got to talk to folks who are doing it. I mean, we have excellent treatment facilities. You know, the community came together in Rutland, as an example, led by Mayor Loris, by Tom Huebner at the hospital, and others, and said, you know, we got a big problem here. Let's finally build a treatment center. They've done it. If you look at the treatment centers that have gone in around Vermont, you know, you don't have folks that are finding that those are crime centers. They're just not.
So we just got this email in that asks us, Governor, in light of your stated commitment to expand treatment for opioid dependence, how can you explain your administration's recent decision to discontinue Vermont Medicaid support for inpatient opioid detox? As you're well aware, there are inadequate outpatient treatment services available, and this decision reduces limited treatment options even further.
We're getting into the weeds, probably in too complex a way to discuss on this radio show. All I can tell you is that we're reviewing that decision right now. But to put it in a soundbite, our hub-and-spoke model, we felt, would replace the need for those beds. That is now being questioned. It should be questioned. We're reviewing it.
Let's turn to our callers and start with Stephen in Barrie. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. My question takes about 10 seconds. It goes like this. Epidemiology has shown that wealth disparity per se is harmful to all members of the society. What, in your opinion, Governor, is the level of wealth disparity where the costs are greater than the benefits, and we need to put a brake on wealth accumulation?
Well, you know, I think the way I wouldn't quite approach it, Stephen, by putting a brake on wealth accumulation. My view is that we should make sure that everyone has the opportunity for wealth accumulation, regardless of what circumstances they're born into. And that's our challenge. And, you know, in the speech, I linked this challenge to the lack of opportunity and hope. Now, let's remember, with heroin addiction, it affects rich and poor, all people from all backgrounds. But one of the drivers is the gap in opportunity. There's just no doubt about that. And that's why early childhood education, the best universal early childhood education, you know, system in the country, why I'm working so hard to establish that, having the best public education system in the country so that we've got more kids moving beyond high school. You know, we have the best graduation rates of any state in the country from high school, but we fail miserably in moving more low-income kids, kids who are born into poverty, beyond high school. And in this workforce, you can't get a good job in most cases unless you have some training beyond high school. So getting that done, and that's what I've been so working so hard to do, building renewable energy and having a bright energy future, which is creating jobs, making sure we have an affordable universal health care system where we have health care because we're Vermonters, not because of what community or family we happy to be lucky enough to be born into or where we work. You know, ensuring that we do the things, including balancing budgets without raising taxes that are beyond people's ability to pay. So, you know, we're getting results. I've been on this job for 3 years. It's a huge privilege to have it. We now have the fifth lowest unemployment rate in the country. We've got the lowest unemployment rate in New England. We actually have the lowest unemployment rate in the Northeast. We actually happen to have the lowest unemployment rate this side of the Mississippi. So we're getting results. It's because of the tough things that we're getting done. And I am planning to intend to keep focusing on that so that we can make sure that kids who are growing up without opportunity in the state right now have it, have the opportunity to accumulate wealth.
Let's talk to Kelly in Burlington. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much. First, I'd like to say, Governor Shumlin, thank you so much for addressing this issue. My family suffered from a personal loss to addiction. So, you know, I'm really excited that this is a topic that's not being hush-hushed anymore. And while I'm really excited that, you know, you're talking about this issue as, you know, not so much an addiction but a disease and treating it like a disease, but I'm also happy about the Good Samaritan law you passed last year, too. And I think more people need to know about that because it can prevent the loss, you know, and the pain a family could feel. But also I wanted to talk more about how you know, you're taking the right steps in, you know, working at the end of the problem, which is, you know, treatment. But what about the start and the ease of prescription opiates and how almost anyone can get them and how doctors just easily prescribe them? Like, what are the actions we can, you know, what can we do to make it more difficult for people to get prescribed these pills? And I'm going to end my statement there.
First of all, Kelly, thanks for your courage in calling. There are too many Vermonters, as you know, who have family members, really close friends, who are struggling with this disease and who won't talk about it. So thank you. And I don't think there's very many of us in this state left who don't have a family member, neighbor, or friend who struggled with opiate addiction in one way or the other. And you're right. When we opened the floodgates in this country to OxyContin, when that was approved by the FDA, we definitely increased our challenge of having more and more people addicted to opiates. So there's a few things that we're doing. I mean, really, the question that you're asking is, what are we doing about prevention? And that's the only area where there's not a good national model, where you can't look to some community or some state and say, wow, they're getting this all right. And one reason I'm so optimistic that we can do this in Vermont is because, you know, at our core, we're people who take care of each other, who know what our neighbors are doing, who actually reach out and help strangers. I mean, we have a sense of community and civic obligation in this state where we're all in this together that you don't find in the other 49 states, in my judgment. So I'm optimistic. Now, what are some of the things we can do? First of all, our health care providers, and we got a $5 million federal grant over 4 years, are helping to get the training, but also more folks getting involved and recognizing the link between passing out FDA-approved pills, and addiction. So we're doing a huge education piece there, and our healthcare community is really invested in that. We're doing better than we were. Second, in terms of prevention, you know, take the Hungry Heart, Bess O'Brien's film. I'm going to give them the money to make sure that every high school kid in Vermont gets to hear from, not only see the film, but hear from the folks who are struggling with addiction so they can hear about their difficult journeys. Third, I'm going to hold a statewide forum at the State House. I hope you'll come, where people who have been affected by this disease and who are involved in it, from law enforcement, prosecutors, judges, service providers, the folks who are working so hard in the treatment facilities across the state, healthcare, and talk about what we're doing in communities that's working so that we can take those models and help them be applied to the entire state. Now, here's a couple of examples. Chief Baker, Mayor Loris down in Rutland, are literally going and knocking on doors in the communities, the areas of Rutland that are really having a challenge with drug addiction, and they're reaching out before people get into crisis, saying, we want to get you the services, we want to get you the treatment, we want to get you the help. You know, that's working pretty well. Mayor Weinberger and Chief Sherlin in Burlington are employing similar tactics. So the question is, what are we doing that we can model for the state that will help us to get the prevention part right? Because you are right. The best deterrent to this challenge is to not have addiction happen in the first place. And we are right now signing up too many Vermonters for a journey that has a hopeless and very difficult future.
Today in the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking about his four-point plan to deal with heroin and opiate addiction in the state of Vermont. Lots of other topics to talk about today. 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Governor Peter Shumlin, talking about a lot of issues in front of the legislature in the 2014 session. You can give us a call and join the conversation by giving us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Governor, on Tuesday, you did something very unusual. You decided to talk to the members of both the House and Senate health care committees, and you acknowledged then that the rollout of the state's new health care exchange has not gone all that well, but you also urged them to keep their eye on what you refer to as the big prize, and that's the implementation of a single-payer health care system. I mean, as you know, one of the big problems with Vermont Health Connect is that the online payment system for small businesses has never worked. And because of that, you set up several options for those small businesses. They can keep their current coverage for the first 3 months of 2014, or they could actually buy their policies directly from the two insurance companies, Blue Cross and MVP. And it appears that a large number of businesses are using these options. Now, yesterday, the insurance companies testified that additional options are going to be needed if the online payment program isn't working by the end of this month, the end of January. Will it be working then?
You know, Bob, I hate to sound like a broken record, but as you know, the folks that we contracted to build the website fell short. There's no one in the state who's more disappointed than I am about it. There's no one who is more angry about it than I am. Having said that, I'm working with these folks all the time to try to get the thing fixed. And it's in the piece that the folks from Blue Cross Blue Shield talked about yesterday in the State House is in testing right now. And the problem with testing is sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I am in agreement with the assessment of Blue Cross that if it works, we will all be happy. And if it doesn't, we'll have a contingency plan in place to ensure that small business doesn't have interrupted coverage, just as I did with individuals.
So you agree that if this isn't working by the end of January, that a second contingency plan will be needed?
Sure. I mean, we can quibble about the date, you know, whether it's the end of January, early February. But clearly, if there is a contingency needed, we're going to deploy it. Meanwhile, the problem with this testing of these complex website buildouts is it might work beautifully on Sunday night, and it might not.
So what's the contingency plan?
Well, it's, you know, I'm not going to get into the weeds on that now, but I can tell you that we will have one. And frankly, Blue Cross Blue Shield made reference to it yesterday. So
would that be the idea of extending coverage for 6 months or just saying, well, businesses can go back and buy directly from the insurance companies?
the logical one would be the second one you just mentioned.
So you also talked about on Tuesday, you renewed your call for a single-payer health care system. Yesterday on this program, Washington County Senator Anthony Polina, who is a longtime supporter of single-payer, said he thinks that the rocky rollout of the exchange has seriously undermined public confidence in the government's ability to offer health care. If that's true, how are you going to restore public confidence? Because some people are saying, if the state can't make the exchange work, how is it ever going to make a single-payer system work?
And let's just back up for a minute. You know, I'm taking full responsibility for what we have. I believe that the Affordable Care Act, in the end, will be a good thing for Vermont. I'm hopeful. But let's remember, and Senator Polina knows this, none of us voted for this. None of us envisioned this as our answer to health care for Vermont. It was passed by the federal government, signed by the president. I want to point out, before I was governor, I had nothing to do with this. My job as governor was to implement it. And every governor in the country is facing the same challenge as I am. So if ever there was a great example of if you give in to every special interest in Washington, D.C., you don't get real health care reform. I mean, this is it. This thing made our existing complicated health care system more complicated. And I'm trying to make it much simpler. The plan that I envision and my idea of reform is to move to a system where you have health care because you're a Vermonter. That simple. You're a resident of the state of Vermont, you have health care, everyone's covered. Where it's financed by all of us based upon ability to pay instead of the crazy system that we have now where some people can choose to pay, and if they are good folks, that's great, they pay. And those who choose not to get paid for by those who choose to. That's not a very logical system. And the second piece is to move our entire delivery system, which we're in the process of trying to do with the help of the Green Mountain Healthcare Board and our hospital execs, our docs, our providers across the state, from a fee-for-service system where we reimburse providers for quantity of care and instead move to a system where they get reimbursed for quality of care. Now, those are big lifts, but listen, I just hope people know in Vermont that our idea of health care reform, mine, was never a website.
So in moving towards the system that you would like to implement, there are a lot of people at the State House who would like to know, how are you going to pay for it? You got to raise around $2 billion in taxes, and I know that will be offsetting what people pay in premiums right now. But would a payroll tax be part of the solution?
Well, let's back up to what you just said. How are you going to pay for it? I know that you'd be replacing existing premiums right now. So it's really not that difficult. We tend to make the payment part of it much more complicated than it needs to be. We're paying for this right now. We're paying for it. You're asking me, how are we going to pay for something that we're paying for now? Well, that's a much tougher, a much easier problem to solve than if we were trying to come up with $2 billion to pay for a healthcare system we didn't have already. So I don't think there's anyone that would look at the way we pay for healthcare now and think it's fair, right, progressive, or smart, because the system we have is a little crazy. And the way we pay our providers is also not fair, progressive, smart, or right. I mean, depending upon who pays them, Medicaid, Medicare, private insurance company, it's out of your pocket, that determines how much they charge. I mean, this is kind of nutty stuff. If you designed both our payment system from scratch and our delivery system from scratch, you would say, wow, like who thought this up? They should probably get a different job. So all I'm saying is, listen, sure, a payroll tax could be included. We have our folks working very hard on various scenarios that would help us replace healthcare premiums with a system where we all pay based upon our ability to pay. Now, the problem with, in my view, just using a payroll tax is it leaves too many folks out. So my own view is we should look at all of the options, figure out the smartest, most fair, progressive way to pay for it, and let's get on with it. Because this current system that we have will bankrupt us. It's not sustainable. And there aren't very many voices in the healthcare delivery system right now who think that they can keep doing what we're doing. And when we talk about that, when you hear our hospital execs and our doctors and our providers saying, I can't afford to stay in practice, or we're worried our hospital is going to go bankrupt. We're not talking about the corner grocery store here, where, yeah, it's sad it goes out, but it usually gets replaced by another grocery store. You can go get groceries somewhere else. We're talking about a great healthcare system we have right now in Vermont that's no longer sustainable because costs are rising faster than our incomes. I mean, get this number. If healthcare costs in Vermont grow at the same rate for the next 10 years that they did for the last 10, our healthcare spending will double, and we're already spending 20 cents every dollar we make on healthcare. I mean, raise your hand if you think that that's a prescription for job growth, prosperity, and a bright economic future.
So if the basic concept is that people will be paying for their health care based on their ability to pay, doesn't that start to limit the number of tax sources that you have?
Not if you're creative. I mean, you know, we will come up with a number of proposals. But we all know that we're paying this right now. And, you know, if you call the premium, the healthcare premiums we pay right now, a tax instead of a premium, you'd have some pretty high taxes in the state. I mean, I can tell you as a business person, there's no way that between what my business pays as a portion of our employees' healthcare and what they pay out of pocket and what they pay to match that premium, you put that all together, it's a whopping number. So we're paying this right now. I know that we think it's radical to move from an idea where we're paying healthcare premiums based on kind of an arbitrary system where you sign up if you want to and you don't if you don't, and the other people pay if you choose not to, to one where we all pay based on our ability to pay. But guess what? The rest of the world does it the other way. And they're spending a lot less than we are on healthcare. They live longer. They have better outcomes. Their babies survive. I mean, you know, it's not like we're getting this whole thing right.
A couple of years ago when Dr. Hsiao released his report on a single-payer system, he suggested it would take probably a 10 or 11% payroll tax to get the business share. And he suggested that's about what many businesses are paying right now. And he thought perhaps for an individual it would be down around 5 or 6% as a payroll tax. But do you think if you ask businesses to have a payroll tax of 10 or 11% to help finance single payer, that that would hurt the creation of jobs? So for businesses, does the payroll tax rate have to be lower?
You know, I want to go into this with an objective point of view, but common sense would suggest that if you use any single tax, payroll tax, whatever, that it's going to put an unfair burden on too few. In other words, there are a lot of folks who don't pay a payroll tax.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Barbara in Huntington. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a comment and question. I have signed up for Vermont Health Connect, picked my plan, paid my premium, got my insurance card, and I was just denied for my prescription coverage, which should be covered under my plan. So I had to pay in full, and I'll get reimbursed later.
And why did they deny you, Barbara?
Because it was not entered into the system, apparently, the fact that I now have coverage for my prescription. The code that was on my card was not accepted.
So listen, call Vermont Health Connect. Keep your receipt. You will get reimbursed, obviously, but that shouldn't be happening. So call Vermont Health Connect and get them to help you straighten it out. Apologize for the challenge.
Barbara, did you say you also had a quick question?
Well, my concern is that, you know, the problems are not just with use, but not just with the sign-up, but with the use of the system. And my question is, why is this happening?
Well, you know, whenever you move 55,000 people into a new system, as you know, it doesn't all go smoothly. There are bumps in the roads. There are glitches. As I've made clear, the technology of this enterprise has certainly not met any of our expectations. So there are going to be some bumps in the road. I don't want to minimize them. It's a pain in the neck. You will get reimbursed, but do call Vermont Health Connect so they can make sure they can get that code entered so you don't have a problem next time you go to the pharmacy.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Peter Shumlin. We've been talking about health care, also the governor's plan for heroin and opiate addiction. What issues do you want to see the 2014 legislature deal with? What are the top issues that you're concerned about? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk about property taxes for a moment. That's an issue on many people's minds. The statewide property tax rate is going up 7 cents. This is happening because the total amount of money being requested in proposed local school budgets across the state is going up. Student enrollment, as you know, is going down. Local grand lists are growing at a very modest pace. What should the legislature do about this issue this year?
Well, let's remember that property tax rates are based upon the votes at town meeting on the budgets that our hardworking school boards put together. So there's a little bit of lots of misunderstanding about this, that somehow magically, you know, Montpelier decides what our property tax rate should be. We have to set the rate based upon the law, Act 68, but that rate reflects what communities decide to spend at town meeting. So the first and most important message from me is this: school boards did a great job of holding budgets to reasonable increases for 3 years. Last year, it didn't go so well. And when I read about, you know, stories of school budgets that are going up 10-11%, you know, that's just not okay. We can't do that. And I hope that voters will go and say to communities that are suggesting 10-11% increases, you know, we're not going along with that. We're going to vote it down. That's the best way to control cost. Now, having said that, I also think that we have to look as a state at our funding formula objectively to see if there are ways that we continue to contain costs so that property taxes don't continue to rise as these school boards get voted, as these school budgets get voted. So school boards, keep up the work that you did for three consecutive years until last year of trying to hold back costs. I know it's tough, but we've got to do it. Our student count has dropped 20% in the state in the last several years, and our property taxes and our school budgets continue to skyrocket. So we've got to find ways to be more innovative and to be better at spending. Second, I'm going to have a statewide forum shortly that brings together real experts on school finance with a lot of the folks that are involved with the struggle and ask the question, are there things in our school funding formula that could be tweaked or changed to help communities, give them incentives to contain costs where it's possible?
Some people think that the system of income sensitivity, and that's a program that allows people with household incomes of under $92,000 or $95,000 to pay their school taxes based on their income and not the value of their property. Some people think that system is A, too generous, and B, contributing to higher school budgets because those people are not necessarily as invested as other taxpayers. Does the legislature need to look at income sensitivity?
Well, I think we all need to look at every aspect of our school funding formula, Act 68, to ask the question, you know, is what you just said true? And if it is true, what should we do to change it that doesn't hurt folks who have houses that they bought a long time ago, whose values have gone up, so their incomes are not necessarily that high, but they're now living in valuable houses, and they can't afford to pay their property tax. I mean, let's remember why that was passed. It was passed because we had a lot of folks, Vermonters, who had bought their homes 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, who might have bought them for, you know, my parents bought their house, you know, their first house, I want to say for $6,000, you know, with 100 acres. Now, it, you know, that house is worth, I don't know, $300,000-$400,000, whatever it is, probably more. You know, should someone who has a low income, but their property is appreciated, be driven out of their house because of their property taxes? So it's a fine line. And the question is, where is the right point? You know, we don't want a system that inoculates people from school spending increases so much that they go to school board meetings and vote a 10% increase when it shouldn't be. At the same time, we don't want to drive folks out of their homes.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Vanessa in Pittsford. Hi, Vanessa. What's on your mind today?
Hi, thank you. First, I'd like to say there are so many issues to address. I realize that, and I appreciate that. I'm asking the governor to maybe still focus on, you know, responding to climate change responsibly, but looking at renewables sited responsibly and scaled to Vermont, because the issue of developing, you know, utility-scale development, higher elevations, impacts all of Vermont socioeconomically, and, you know, stormwater in rain events flows downhill and impacts everyone. So I guess I'm asking him to maybe comment on that and then also think about the siting too close to homes in Vermont and how that also affects Vermonters socioeconomically. And what would he tell the Therrien family or the Nelson family specifically, you know, speaking to that as well?
Well, thanks, Vanessa. And, you know, the first thing I'd say is for anything that we do in Vermont, when it comes to power generation, you know, should be looked through the lens of, you know, how does this impact our neighbors? How does it impact our communities? And how do we ensure that we move from the old days, which used to be, you know, big generation far away somewhere that was out of sight and out of mind, to what I believe is absolutely essential, locally generated green, clean power. And, you know, I know that we're not all going to agree on this one, and you're probably not going to agree with me on this one. But I feel very strongly that when we talk about the impacts of moving power from big, dirty generation, used to be oil and coal a lot, to wind, solar, biomass, and all the other options, we really have to be willing to make some changes to accept that if we don't do this quickly and if we don't do it widely, this planet's not going to be livable for future generations. And that sort of seems like a big one to me. I think climate change is our biggest threat. Now, that doesn't mean that every wind project is right for Vermont. I get that. The Public Service Board has a very good process, in my view, of looking at those questions. I've had a siting commission that met and came back with recommendations on how we can make that process even more inclusive and better. So I'm not saying we're doing it perfectly, but I will say this. I'm incredibly proud that we have more than doubled the amount of solar deployments in the state since I became governor. We're going to double it again in my second term, at least. I'm very proud that we're finally building wind in Vermont, and that wasn't happening before I was governor. I'm very proud of the fact that we continue to find other ways to use our forests through pellets and biomass and everything else we can think of to get off our addiction to oil and coal and other resources. And, you know, I mean, look at this winter. You know, people keep sometimes say, well, you know, it's cold. And then, yeah, it is. But then it's warm the next day. I hear it's going to be 40s this weekend. You know, these huge changes in temperature. That's what climate change is about. Don't lose the change word. You know, these crazy fluctuations where we go from snow to ice to thaw back to ice. 60, 70 degree fluctuations in 24 hours and then back again. We just didn't used to see that when I was a kid in the state. So the biggest threat we have to our state is climate change and the planet, obviously. Getting off oil and coal isn't easy. When it's in your backyard versus far away somewhere, you know, it's a tough conversation and it's going to be tough change, but we've got to push on.
Governor, we just got this email that says that you talk about fighting drugs coming to Vermont, but that you neglect to say that, you know, we have very lax gun laws in the state. And what we're hearing more and more about that is that guns in Vermont are the currency to be paying for these drugs. It's not money that dealers want. They want guns. And we're hearing that a very high percentage of Vermont guns are being used in crimes in other states in New England. Are you going to be able to address that issue?
You know, I know that the caller or the emailer or the might not agree with me on this and probably won't, but I feel strongly that the gun law issue has to be dealt with so that it's universal to all 50 states. And if it's not, you'll have folks who shouldn't have guns buying them in New Hampshire instead of Vermont or whatever, they'll get them. And the folks who should have guns will have trouble getting access to them. So, you know, we're not going to agree on this one probably, but I think Vermont good common sense is that if you're going to have background checks, which I support, or any other things, you need it to apply to all 50 states. And if one state does it, you just drive the folks who shouldn't have them to another state.
Would you support increasing penalties for people who use guns in an illegal fashion or trade them for drugs?
Well, you know, I proposed in my speech that we enhance penalties for folks that use weapons when they come and rip off our homes in pursuit of our property to support their drug habit. So, you know, that's an area where it can make a difference to say, hey, these penalties make sense if you are using a weapon. And it could be a baseball bat, could be a knife, could be a gun, but if you're using a weapon when you rip someone's home off. So that is good common sense. But I'm just saying, you know, we can discuss national gun laws and state gun laws till the cows come home, and I guess we will. But my own view is that if you have one law that's different than the law next door and the state next door, that's where the bad guys can go get their guns. So let's make this a 50-state strategy.
Governor Peter Shumlin, many thanks for being on the program today and discussing so many issues with us.
Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure.
Coming up on Monday on Vermont Edition, winter camping. Are you an avid camper and backpacker? Why wait for the summertime to pull out your tent and sleeping bag? We'll talk to people who prefer to camp in the wintertime. Post your photos and stories of winter camping to Vermont Edition's Facebook page and join us Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rickson Gary, and Sage Van Wing. Peter Biello directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.